This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Pulled Under, written by Lisa Renee Jones, performed by Lance Greenfield and Muffy Newton.
Chapter 1. Asher. Leather, tattoos, wine, whiskey, music, women. I left a world filled with those things 10 years ago, and did so tattooed, fucked in the head, and with a vow to never return. And yet here I am, behind the bar of one of New York City's dive bars, AC/DC's Back in Black blasting through the speakers, handing a dude with long hair, tats, and more eyeliner on than the blonde chick with him, a beer. He grabs the bottle, tips me a whole $2 fucking, and leaves. His chick, however, does not. She lingers a few beats, casts me a glance with her bedroom eyes, the kind filled with an invitation that says, "Get me naked in the back room right now." As far as I'm concerned, any chick banging a dude with eyeliner isn't getting a piece of this. I motion her onward. She glowers and turns away, attaching her arm to that of eyeliner dudes, leaving me with only one question. How the fuck a chick who gets off on that guy gets off on me? I mean, yeah, sure, I'm inked, and my blonde hair is on the long side. But those are holdovers from Deep Cover Special Ops. And the only damn makeup I wear is the kind I've kissed off some hot chick's mouth, right before I kiss her everywhere beyond as well. I toss the money into the tip jar for whatever poor soul that ain't me, who needs $2 to help them survive New York City. I'm not that guy, literally or figuratively, nor am I a victim or a fool, all of which I can thank the hard lessons this shitty lifestyle taught me. Though at the moment, it's not quite as shitty, considering one of the staff's female members is dancing on top of the bar a little to my right, in shorts that barely cover her fine ass. But then, a fine ass is not why I'm here, any more than the music. I'm here to give a mother and a father the justice they deserve over a daughter gone too soon, along with 3 other look-alike young women, all dead after visiting bars like this. All dead after doing some cocktail of a drug that no one else seems to be dying from. My motivation to give the parents peace and catch what might be a serial killer is the only reason I let my boss talk me into this hellhole in the first place. I scan the dimly lit area, surveying the bars left and right that frame the warehouse-style room, both with neon blue skulls over the top that match the one behind me. In between them are double doors that lead to the stage and seating, which are shut now, set to open soon. 2 young guys stop in front of the bar, snickering as they order drinks with dirty names, amused in a way I hope like hell I was never amused by such things. I pour the mixtures and slide glasses in front of them. 2 buttery nipples, I say, leaning forward to shout over the music and add, "Come back when you have the real thing and the drinks are on me." They curse at me, and this time I don't even get $2 for a tip. In a highly appropriate moment, the music shifts to Def Leppard's "Pour Some Sugar on Me," and now I actually am amused. I bark out laughter while my gaze catches on the entryway to the lower level of the 2-level building. And my target, the guy my team at Walker Security believes is the guy we're after, walks in the door. Juju, he calls himself, a nickname for drug dealer in his mind, and in mine, stupid fucking idiot, and perhaps a killer. In which case, I'd like to nickname him Dead, but the law says I'll just have to call him Arrested instead. In times like these, I miss those Navy SEAL days, when I dealt with shitheads like him in jungles, deserts, and dark caves, and was even ordered to do so. Juju gives me a 2-finger wave, his 1 tat sleeve accented with black jeans and a white t-shirt, not so unlike what I'm wearing. I chose my getup to blend with the crowd, and I'd bet my new BMW that the same applies to him. He's stupid, but he's not dumb. And anyone who doesn't understand that stupid is a mentality and dumb is just plain dumb is lucky. They haven't met someone like Juju. I have. Too many times. I pour him what I already know to be his usual. Whiskey sour, a short pour, and plenty of lemon. It would be a simple drink, if not for the high-end whiskey he favors, combined with the short pour that tells me he needs a level head and he won't waste an expensive whiskey. That level head he maintains is about that stupid business of selling drugs. He motions to the women with him to sit down on a love seat and heads in my direction. I serve a customer, and by the time I'm done, he's standing in front of me, slapping 100 on the bar. "For you," he says, shoving the bill in my direction before sipping his drink, and doing so a little too properly to match his spiky black hair and tattooed up neck. This isn't where he's from. It's where he burrows. I grab the bill and shove it into the tip jar. He frowns. "That's for you." "Community tip jar," I say. "No one else is on duty. New guy is starting tonight." He leans closer. "Let's talk after the bar closes. Meet me." "Sorry, man. Unless you get a whole lot prettier, which is doubtful, you aren't my type." He laughs. "You're a funny man. I'm going to help you make some cash. Take a break before the club closes. We'll talk." He motions behind me. "Bring something the girls will like." He slides another 100 on the bar. "The extra is a gift, not a tip. Keep it." He walks away. Bingo. I'm in. And the father of Lily Waters might just get the justice the police haven't delivered. The man deserves that justice, and then some. His kid was 18, and on her way to Yale when she died. Poisoned on a night, friends say she just wanted to watch a band play at a similar club. Which was the same story for every girl now dead and buried, all with the same drug in their systems, laced with poison. A drug that I've determined that only Juju sells. And since he's favoring this club now, I'm favoring this club now. Aiming to satisfy his women, where I doubt he can, I make 2 chocolate martinis in between filling 3 orders before I deliver the drinks to Juju and his girls. I don't look at them. I barely look at him. I'm hard to get like that. I turn away from them, which is when I find Riley, the grumpy old ex-rocker who runs this place, standing behind my bar with some new dancer chick next to him. She's brunette, with long hair, a slender frame, and big breasts. I'm guessing I'll round the bar to find short shorts and an ass that will make me stand at attention. Hey, I deserve it. I've just broken through with Juju. I close the distance between me and them and join the duo on the other side of the counter. As soon as I'm there, I'm filling an order. The minute it's done, Riley points to the woman. "Train Sierra. I got shit to do." He leaves me with the woman, who is not wearing short shorts, but faded, snug jeans that are almost as cock-worthy, despite the absence of naked skin. I'm about to question her uniform choice when the music cuts out, a sign that the crowd is about to be allowed into the auditorium, where a dance floor is set up on weekend nights. A big portion of the bar traffic will soon move there, at least temporarily, offering a breather and a chance to monitor Juju with more ease. The dancer currently on top of the bar jumps down and heads in that direction, where she will take the stage with several others, or so I'm told, and entertain the crowd before the band starts playing. I give the new woman a once-over and decide she really is 10 shades of hotness. And fuck me, my kind of hotness, which is why I happily dole out my advice and training. You'll get better tips with your ass hanging out, I say.
Then you better go change and hop the hell on top of the bar,
she says, her voice a raspy, southern sexiness that has my cock saluting.
The music is bound to start again soon, she adds, and I can't wait for the show, the one you'll be putting on while I watch.
My lips curve. My shows are private.
So are mine.
I arch a brow. Isn't that going to make it hard for you to do your job?
You seem to be doing just fine without your ass hanging out.
Some asses just look good no matter what they're covered in, I comment dryly. Now she arches a brow.
Are you saying mine doesn't?
Turn around and I'll give you my expert opinion.
Never.
Challenge accepted, I say, surprising myself by how damn much I mean those words. I want this woman, and since I don't do relationships, it doesn't even matter that she's of this world. I won't be a part of it for long.
You enjoy defeat,
she replies.
I get it. Some people are like that.
Hey! Someone shouts as a rush of people swarm the bar. Over here. Yeah. Hey. Over here. Hang tight, sweetheart, I say to my new trainee, who I might just school in more than her wardrobe. We really do need to address the fact that you're wearing too many clothes. I rotate to the bar to be bombarded with another half dozen demands, which tell me the sidebars are closed to push traffic. It's a strategy meant to keep people near the dance floor where they stay thirsty and drink more. A rush of even more customers has me looking left to discover that the new dancer chick is filling orders and is clearly not the new dancer chick, but my new bartender. She's also now standing next to me, reaching across me to jab an olive with a toothpick, pausing to look at me.
I can handle this rush if you want to climb on top and perform.
Anger lights her eyes. And hey, I get it. She's pissed at my assumption that she's the entertainment. I deserve her wrath, but holy fuck, bring it on and let me kiss it all better. Private shows only, remember?
Chicken.
She laughs, but doesn't wait for a reply as she moves down the bar and drops that olive in a martini she hands to a woman. I reluctantly give my attention to my next customer instead of her, plowing through three orders before a familiar, pretty brunette, a look-alike to the four victims, steps in front of me.
White Russian,
she says, playing the undercover role of patron for the third night in a row, when she's really one of Walker's own and a badass ex-FBI agent to boot.
Make it weak, like you.
She adds. You're starting to tell lame jokes like Blake, I say. Blake being both her husband and one of the founding brothers of Walker Security. Poor you and me, I add.
If I sounded like Blake, she replies, I'd say make it fucking weak like you.
That's more like it, I say, considering Blake is one fuck-happy motherfucker. Pouring her drink sans the booze. I slide her drink across the bar. She tosses down cash and picks up the glass, testing the pure cream for flavor before smacking her lips together.
Nothing like a virgin Russian to get a girl hot,
she murmurs, before amending with,
a fucking virgin Russian. Let's hope it's our lucky night.
And with that, she turns away and heads in Juju's general direction, hoping tonight is the night that she gets his attention, rather than some other sweet young thing that can't protect herself. Keeping an eye on her and Juju, I fill another order while she sits down at a table alone and crosses her bare legs, exposed in a short skirt. Almost instantly, several men circle her, and holy hell, I don't know how Blake stays sane in these situations. He's outside in a van watching, torturing himself right this very minute,
which is a good thing since a rush of people encased the bar, waiting for service. I glance left to check on Sierra and find some big bald dude reaching over the bar and grabbing her hair. Fuck, I murmur, launching myself that direction as Sierra proves she's not an easy victim by slamming a steel mixing pitcher against the jerk's head. He cocks his arm to punch her, and I am there in time to catch his hand. Let her go, I demand, but my grip has already delivered the desired effect. He releases her hair, and at the same moment, Big Bruno, the bouncer who favors this side of the bar, grabs him from behind, pulling him away from us. My hands go to Sierra's shoulders, turning her to face me. You okay? Her chin is on her chest. Yes, she breathes out. Yes, fine. But she doesn't look at me. Sierra. I'm fine. She insists. But when her gaze lifts for just a moment, there is vulnerability in her pale blue stare, a hint of a past trauma that she quickly blinks away while firming her chin and adding, Thank you for grabbing that bastard. I mean that, sincerely. However, you're still the asshole who assumed I was a dancer because I have boobs and a better ass than you. And with that bravado clearly meant to hide the vulnerability she dared to show me, she steps firmly backward and twists out of my reach. Sierra immediately attends to another customer, but I watch her, ignoring the shouts in my direction, trying to figure out why I can't look away from her. I mean, yeah, sure. She has secret, heavy baggage of some sort, but then, so do most people. The difference between them and her is that I usually don't ask questions unless the person has become my duty. It's safer that way. Obviously, she's not my duty, but I have this gut feeling that despite her obvious ability to protect herself, she'd be better off if she were. I ignored a feeling like this once, and someone died. Since I learned my lesson, I don't ignore feelings like this, ever. Which means that Sierra just inherited her own personal protector. I have a feeling I might be taking a lashing when she finds out. But my gut also tells me that I'm going to enjoy the hell out of it. Chapter 2. Asher. Houston, we have a problem. Fuckhead Juju has eyes on Sierra and watches her all damn night while I watch him and keep her close, accidentally creating opportunities to join her in her personal space. She steps toward me to grab a bottle of booze, and I move in her direction. The minute we gently collide, I have an excuse to touch her. I catch her arm and turn her into me, making sure we look all kinds of intimate. Making sure Juju thinks she's mine when she's not. Yet. Sorry, sweetheart. You okay?
My name is Sierra,
she says. But she doesn't push my hand away. Sierra, I say. Are you okay?
I'm fine, but since you're holding yourself up with my arm, are you? How delicate are you?
I laugh. Fuck. When was the last time a woman put me in my place and made me laugh? Right. Never. Sweetheart, as long as it's you I'm bumping into, I'm on top of the fucking world.
Sierra, not sweetheart.
If we're ever naked together, I'll call you Sierra and make damn sure you know I'm with you, just you and 100% me. Until that time, you're sweetheart. That's just how it is. I turn away and help my customer. She does the same. We get a small break and she yells,
Hey, you!
I frown and look her direction. You talking to me?
Yes, because you're hey you until otherwise notified.
She walks toward me and stops a wide lean from touching me.
Until we're naked. At which time I'll call you Asher and let you know I'm with you, and just you, 100%. And since that's not going to happen, because amongst other things, sweetheart irritates me so damn much, you stay, hey you, for as long as I endure this hellhole.
She whirls around and gives me her back in a sweet view of her heart-shaped ass. Apparently, sweetheart hits a nerve. Hey you works for me, as long as she's talking to me and not Juju or really any other fucking guy. Because, yeah, I want her. I want her in a bad way. I pour a shot for the hot chick next in line, while she offers up a view of her breasts hanging out of a low-cut shirt. They're impressive enough to get the guy right next to her gawking. But these college kids in this bar don't get me off. I like a grown-ass woman like Sierra. And apparently, Juju agrees, considering he's staring at her with a heightened fierceness. The blonde moves on, and I turn to Sierra at the same moment that she catches Juju staring at her. Discomfort radiates off her, and she turns away and walks to the back bar. Good move, sweetheart, I think. But Juju doesn't like it. He's now challenged. He gets up and heads in her direction. I walk to the back of the bar and join Sierra. The creep coming your way is trouble. I am too, for him, not you. Stay close to me and don't smash me in the head with a cup or bottle.
Are you going to make me want to smash you in the head with something?
Perhaps. But in the process, I'm going to either back him off by being nice to you or break a bottle over his head for you.
Men like him prey on weakness, which means let me handle him myself. Back off.
He's not that drunk asshole who grabbed you earlier. He's a drug dealer, and that's the nicest thing anyone can say about him.
Asher, man,
Juju says, stepping to the bar.
Who's the babe?
Sierra turns away from me and walks straight to Juju.
He doesn't like when you call him babe, and it might blow your cover with those girls if you do it that loudly. What do you want to drink?
I laugh. I can't help myself, and I don't try either. I bark it right out and just go with it. I follow that purposeful cackle by joining the two of them and leaning an arm on the bar, arching a brow at Juju. Something you want to tell me? Because, man, if you're gay, that's cool and all. I support gay rights and to each their own, but for the record, I don't do cock. I'm a straight tits and ass man.
Then you and I should talk tits and ass later tonight, because I can show you plenty.
He glances at Sierra.
Bring her.
I like my women hard to get. I don't share, I say. And you'd be smart to remember that. He smirks.
Sounds like we need to talk quid pro quo. You keep her, and I get you.
He looks at Sierra and slides $100 on the bar like he did to me.
There's a whole lot more where that came from.
He promises and turns away. She looks at me.
I am not touching that. I'm not even picking it up and putting it in the tip jar.
Good decision, I say, snatching it up and placing it in the jar before I step to her, close without touching her, when all I'd like to do is tunnel my hands in her hair and kiss the fuck out of her.
You're tough. I like that.
What the hell was that? He'll trade me for you?
I got this, sweetheart. Don't worry. She studies me for several intense beats.
I need this job,
she says, and there is a hint of desperation to her voice. And you have it, I say. And she has me, even if she doesn't want me. Yet. I've already decided that I'm going to do my damn best to make her want me. What I'm not going to let her know is just how badly Juju's attention means she needs me.
Chapter 3 Sierra.
Once upon a time, a young girl dreamed of her very own Prince Charming. He would be handsome and debonair in every way. He would sweep her off her feet, and they'd live happily ever after. As she got older, that same girl, me, in fact, had career goals and dreams, but she still believed in love. She still believed her Prince Charming would support her dreams and goals while she supported his. They could have it all. And so, it happened. My prince arrived, and life was good. Until it wasn't. Until it was bad. So very bad. Flash forward to now, and I'm standing in the break room of a bar, waiting for tip money I need just to eat, while Asher talks to the boss about my performance. In other words, did I pass the one-night trial I begged for earlier today? This is my reality, which I would never have believed possible just last year, or even 9 months ago when I ran to stay alive. But this is as real as it gets, and that fact punches at me pretty much every moment of every day. I could blame Cinderella for all this. I could analyze the psychological reasons that being raised by a single mother made me take the story too literally. But I'm not a stupid person, and I have no excuse for looking at life through Cinderella-colored glasses. I'm the one who took the fairy tale too far. I'm good at taking things too far. I want to be perfect, and I dive in and grab what is in front of me, and sometimes it backfires. Boy, did it backfire this time, or I wouldn't be here now. I wanted to be the perfect everything. I press my hand to my forehead. Perfectly stupid. I murmur, tunneling my fingers through my hair.
I hope you're not talking about me.
At the sound of Asher's voice, I whirl around to find him leaning on the doorway, and the bright lights do nothing to disprove his rock star bad boy hotness. I fold my arms in front of me. I would never call anyone stupid.
But you just did,
he says. His eyes, which I now know to be a bright grass green, are fixed on me too intently for comfort.
I heard you say,
why were you listening? I ask, my fisted hand settling on my hips.
It's my experience that when someone speaks, they want to be heard.
I was talking to myself. I wanted me to hear.
Did you?
Yes, I say, silently adding, too late. I heard the warnings in my head too late. He arches a brow, those full lips of his, lips that I shouldn't notice hinting at a smile.
Do you always talk to yourself?
Yes, actually. I say, I do. Can we move on?
Yes, but for the record, no one is perfect, sweetheart. Take it from the guy who not only made an ass of himself when he met you, but also spent too many years of his life trying to be perfect and failing.
Is that why you're here? I ask before I can stop myself.
You think being here makes you a failure?
He's here. If I say yes, I've called him a failure, and I have no idea what his history is any more than he does mine. No, I say. Being without a job is a failure. Do I get to keep this one?
Yes, you do.
Relief washes over me. Thank you. When do I come back?
Tomorrow night.
And tonight's tips? How much did we make? I managed to sound quite matter-of-fact, when I don't feel matter-of-fact at all. His eyes narrow ever so slightly, intelligence in their depths, and I have the feeling that he sees my desperation. He doesn't push, though. He simply pushes off the door frame, and reaching behind him produces an envelope, the colorful tattoo sleeves covering both of his arms on display, random images creating a collage, a jaguar, a ship anchor, an ace card, just to notice a few. I don't care for tattoos. I don't care for this place, and he's a part of this place, but the art is beautiful. He's beautiful, and I'm in an ugly mess that...
You gonna take it, or are you just gonna stare at it, sweetheart?
My gaze jerks to his, and he arches a brow. What?
You're staring at the envelope like you think it will bite.
We both know he's not talking about the envelope any more than I was looking at the envelope, but I go with it. Because you're holding it like bait for a fish, and I'm the fish. I don't like that. And for the record, I might bite. He moves to close the distance between us, with this loose-legged swagger that I have no doubt is meant to mask cool calculation. I've given him the excuse he wanted to step within a lean of me. Too close. So close that scent of his reminds me of a winter wonderland of spice. It's an assessment I'd come to hours ago, in one of the many up-close-and-personal moments I'd shared with him tonight. The most personal moments I've shared with anyone in 9 months.
"It's all yours,"
he says, handing it to me. I reach for it, careful not to touch him. I already know the jolt that delivers. How much cash?
$1,000 even.
My eyes go wide, chin lifting to search his face. $1,000? We made $2,000 tonight? He studies me for several beats, seeming to weigh his reply before he says,
"You made $1,000.
It's an odd way of replying, but I let it go. Maybe he took more than 50%, but I'm not going to complain. I need this money. I unzip my purse at my hip and stick the envelope inside, because pulling up my shirt to get to my money belt isn't exactly opportune right now. I'll see you tomorrow night, I say, stepping around him and hurrying toward the door.
This isn't your kind of place,
he says. I pause for a moment at the doorway without turning, a million replies fighting for my tongue in my head, but I settle on a simple reply. It is now. With that, I turn into the narrow hallway and walk the short distance to the exit and push the bar to open the steel door, stepping into a dark alleyway, compliments of a burned-out light. I don't need to be seen with lights on anyway. I don't need to be memorable. I hurry forward, and I've barely taken 2 steps when the feeling of being watched washes over me. I speed up to a near run, thinking of the thieves who might wait for a bartender or waitress to get off work to steal their tips. Thinking of that creep Juju. Thinking of the death threat I believe to be real, or I wouldn't have run. I reach into my purse and remove my bottle of mace. I place my finger on the button and round a corner, but it's dark and empty, except for me, some random trash blowing around, and the footsteps behind me. What if they found me? What if he found me? I can't die. I don't want to die. I dart around another corner and flatten myself inside a wide archway to a building entrance. Those footsteps follow, stop in front of me, and a huge man faces me. I spray the mace.
Holy fuck, Sierra.
Oh, God. I've just sprayed Asher. Chapter 4 Sierra. Asher rotates and flattens himself against the wall next to me. Instinctively, I follow, stepping in front of him. His eyes are shut, and even in the shadows of the dimly lit, deserted street, I can see the pain etched in his face. Asher, I'm so sorry. I didn't know it was you. I was alone and—
Stay away from the fumes,
he orders, his voice a deep rasp, and his eyes are watering to the point that it looks like he's crying when he's not.
They fan outward,
he adds. I'm fine, I say, not sure how he's worried about me right now.
You're not fine.
I have the mace in my hand, and I hastily shove it back into my purse and zip it. What can I do? I ask, looking left and right down rows of concrete, old buildings shuttered for the night, or just plain vacant, but there is no one in this area this time of night. There's no one to help, I say. I don't know what to do. How do I help?
You don't,
he says, huffing out a breath and blinking several times before he gives up opening his eyes.
It will pass.
How do you know? What if—
I know.
He squats down, pressing his hands on his knees, lowering his chin to his chest.
It's passing.
I squat, but I'm already too off balance as it is, clearly, or I wouldn't have sprayed him, and I just give in and settle on my knees. Asher.
It's passing.
He breathes out again, but as he sucks air in, it's with a horrid wheezing sound. It's not passing, I say urgently. You can't breathe.
Give me a few minutes,
he says gruffly, lifting his head and actually opening his eyes.
It doesn't affect me like other people.
I blanch. What? How would you know that? Do you make a habit of sneaking up on women and getting maced? The accusation is out before I can stop it. That part of me just trying to survive going on defense. I regret it instantly, but it's too late. He reacts before I can retract my words.
Jesus, Sierra, I was going to walk you the fuck home.
He stands up and leans on the wall, his head resting against the hard surface. I'm sorry, I say, scrambling to my feet, fighting the urge to touch him when his clothes are contaminated and I shouldn't be touching him anyway. I'm jumpy on these streets back here and we just met, but you don't deserve that and I shouldn't have said it. His phone rings, and somehow he actually reaches into his pocket and pulls it out, but when he looks at the screen, he makes a frustrated sound. He lifts his head and looks at me, the whites of his eyes burned red.
My vision is shit right now,
he says, holding it out to me, the glow of a streetlight illuminating the pain in his handsome face.
Who is it?
He asked. I glance at the caller ID. It says Dickhead. He apparently likes whoever Dickhead is or feels obligated to talk to this person, because he answers the call immediately.
Blake?
He bites out.
You're on speaker. Why do you sound like you have a stick up your ass?
Blake asks.
And why the fuck am I on speaker? Before you say anything else.
Asher warns.
Sierra from the bar is with me. Make me understand.
Blake says.
Why am I on speaker with Sierra from the bar? I got maced.
Asher says, his voice gravelly.
I don't want the residue on my phone. Fuck.
Blake curses dramatically.
What happened? Who the hell maced you?
Me, I say, but I didn't know it was him. Blake is silent 2 beats and then barks out laughter.
Holy fuck. Way to be a smooth operator, Ash. Holy fucking hell, how bad is it? Tear gas.
Ash replies as if that answers the question, his voice not as gravelly now.
Ah, well, hell man.
Blake says,
you're good, right? Luke told me your boys were hit with that shit in training so many times it's now like drinking a cheap shot of tequila. It burns hard and fast, and then you beg for more.
I can't help it. I have to ask. Who is Luke and what training? I ask, but I'm ignored. Asher responds with a pained laugh as he lowers his chin to his chest again.
Yeah, man. I'm smelling daisies right now and doing it without a water supply. You gotta find some water to at least rinse your eyes.
Blake says, bypassing my question for admittedly and obviously more important matters.
I can't get a car and clothes to you for at least 30 minutes. I'm not going in a public place with the residue all over me.
Asher says,
send a pickup. I'll ride in the back and I'll wait right here. Where is here?
Blake asks. I live in this shithole of a neighborhood. I interject, despite the many reasons I shouldn't do what I'm about to do, but I have to help. I did this to Asher. Asher lifts his chin and looks at me, a chill in his stare that wasn't there before my accusation, despite my spraying him with mace. There was also surprise, and thankfully far less pain than even minutes ago. I'm 2 blocks away, I say, doubling down on my offer and my apology.
Problem solved,
Blake says for him.
I need your address, Sierra.
I have to buzz you up when you get there, I say before dictating the street and apartment number.
Got it,
Blake says.
I'll make sure you get clothes, Ash. Sierra, he's more valuable than you know. Try not to kill him before I get there, will you?
He doesn't wait for a reply. He disconnects. And I immediately try to make peace. Asher,
you sure you want me in your apartment?
He asks, speaking almost normally now.
I might be a stalker who makes a habit of attacking women on the street.
I'm sorry, I say again. I'm very edgy for reasons that have nothing to do with you.
I'm standing right here, sweetheart. I'm pretty sure it has at least something to do with me.
It really doesn't, I say. But like I said, I'm...
Don't apologize again,
he says firmly.
But when the time is right, say my name, Sierra, like I just did yours. Now more than ever, I'm going to want to know you really do know it's me you're with.
I cut my gaze, afraid this man who was a stranger will see more than anyone has in years, now that I'm honest with myself. Afraid that comment already infers that he does. Afraid of the intimacy he infers, as much as I crave it when I cannot. It's wrong. It's unfair to him. It's dangerous to him. Because I still have a Prince Charming, who I now know is really the beast.
Sierra,
he says, a prod in his voice that I can't seem to resist. I look at him and he adds,
What happened tonight is done. But we aren't.
There is no we.
We work together. And in answer to your earlier question about the gas, I'm an ex-Navy SEAL. I've done extensive gas training, and Luke is Blake's brother, who I served with in the SEALs.
Oh, I say, surprised and embarrassed. You were, but you're...
Tatted up and have long hair?
He asks. Yes, actually.
A blonde, pretty boy American screams military overseas. It would have been a death wish.
I see.
I don't. My eyes are fucked right now. My vision is waning in and out. And for the record, I'm capable of functioning with this stuff in my eyes and on my skin. That doesn't mean I enjoy it.
He pushes off the wall and looks down at me.
Either take me to your place, or I have to find a place I won't contaminate to rinse off.
I'm not letting you go someplace else. I say, can you walk?
I can walk. I can fight if I have to. Apparently, I can survive armed assassins, but not a 5'4" brunette named Sierra with mace.
His lips curve.
But that's okay. Next time it might not be me.
I really am sorry.
You don't need to keep saying that. Just take me to water.
Right. I turn and start walking, and he's quickly by my side. The streets are deserted except for a homeless man lying on a step in front of a small church. The wind is non-existent, the night a warm September evening, and I don't know New York City enough to know when that will change. I just know that I don't have a coat, which is on my list of must-buys with the cash in my purse. We walk the full 2 blocks, and I don't speak, and Asher doesn't speak. But I am aware of this man in ways I'm not sure I've ever felt with anyone, even my Prince Charming, once upon a fake fairy tale. But then, I'm different now than when I met him, and everything with Asher has been up close and personal from the moment I met him tonight. I'm not sure how I correlate those two things. Actually, I do. He's overwhelmed me in too many ways to count, mostly good. Obviously, I've overwhelmed him now, too. I sprayed the man with mace. I know how to leave a lasting impression. We're here, I say, halting our progress in front of the ancient concrete building that cost me a small fortune, despite it being a rat trap, quite literally. And I hate to break the news to you, I add, but we have to walk up 4 flights of stairs. I punch in the code to the door that buzzes open and turn to face him. My place is pretty bad. I just moved here and—
I don't care about your apartment, Sierra.
He promises, and I notice that he's using my name still, not some generic endearment.
Let's go inside,
he adds. I nod and turn to open the door. He catches it and holds it. I walk inside and turn to him again. The stairs in your eyes.
I've navigated much worse than stairs, in much worse conditions.
Because you're a Navy SEAL, I say, telling myself that means the beast can't hurt him. But that's a lie I want to believe.
Ex-SEAL,
he says, a distinction that seems important to him, and it is to me, too. He can't be plucked from a mission and killed by one of the many powerful people in the government that owe the beast favors. It's a ridiculous way to comfort myself for obvious reasons. The beast could still come after him, and for nothing more than looking in my direction. Inhaling on that thought, I turn away from Asher and cross the small foyer to the narrow, steep staircase where I begin the treacherous climb that kills me daily. But I'm not thinking about the pain. I'm thinking about Asher behind me, about how good it feels to be with one of the good guys for once, which is how I read Asher. But then what do I know? I haven't exactly proven my assessment of character to be stellar, which would be a problem if I still had a future as a clinical psychologist, but I don't. That career choice and my internship with a world-renowned clinical psychologist and mentor crashed and burned 9 months ago when I'd been forced to start my city and state hopping to finally land here. I shove that thought away as we reach my floor and the tiny hallway I share with only one other tenant. Pausing at my door, Asher joins me, and I unzip my purse and grab my key, quickly sticking it in the lock. Asher steps to the landing with me, so close I can feel the warmth of his body encase mine.
Wait to go inside, Sierra.
I leave the key in the lock and turn to face him. Afraid I'll spray you with mace again once I have you trapped inside? I ask, using the witty remark to hide the fact that his nearness and the way he's towering over me while smelling all deliciously earthy jolts me.
You've already maced me,
he says.
Find another way to torture me that we can both enjoy. If you need ideas, I'll offer a free tutorial on another occasion. But right now, my clothes are contaminated, and yours most likely are as well. Tear gas has a way of finding places to settle and can become a problem later. You need to take off your clothes, bag them, and shower. Stand in the bathtub when you undress and bag your clothes there. And I mean everything. You can wash your clothes, but trash your purse.
It's my only purse.
Replace it, he says.
That costs money, I think, but I bite my tongue. Is this really necessary?
The way that gas affected me,
he says.
That was about 20% of what most people will feel.
That was obviously a yes. I need to replace the purse. You need to shower first. You're the one with burning eyes and skin.
Unless you want me walking around in a towel, I have to wait for clothes.
Oh. His lips curve, and I have no idea why I'm so obsessed with this man's mouth.
Is that a yes or no?
He asks. My gaze jerks to his. What was the question?
Me in a towel.
I'll give you my pink robe. You have to shower first, though you sure aren't acting like you need instant relief.
I'm good at hiding pain, sweetheart, and this isn't as much about me right now as it is ensuring I don't expose anyone else.
Is that a yes on the robe? I ask.
As much as I like pink,
he replies,
I'd rather see it on you. And since chemical contamination will really screw up any mood we get going, I'm forced to move on, right when I'd rather not. Do you have plastic bags?
Yes, I do, under the kitchen sink.
Good. Go to the sink. Wash your hands and arms thoroughly. You don't want your fresh clothes to end up contaminated. Then get the bags and pick out new clothes with as little contact with anything else as possible. Whatever we touch, we'll wipe down.
I had no idea this was such a big deal.
Most people don't. We should go inside.
Right. His eyes. They're red, and I should be rushing him to water. Still, when I turn and grab the knob, I can't seem to make myself open the door and invite the questions I know will follow. Asher knows, too. He is suddenly a little closer, when he was already close, his hand on the door above me.
Nothing in that apartment matters to me,
he says. He's wrong. It will matter. I feel it. But I can't change what's to come at this point. I open the door and enter what is quite literally my hole-in-the-wall efficiency, where the kitchen and the rest of the place are one room. A bathroom and a closet that is barely a closet are the only attachments. The door shuts behind me, the lock turning into place, both of which tells me that Asher now consumes the small space because he's that big and it's that little. I'm also alone with the only man I've been alone with since leaving the Beast 9 months ago. I'm alone with the only man I actually might like for far longer, and how fitting to my dilemma that we're covered in toxic chemicals. Because I'm toxic, and I'm not going to give Asher a chance to try to play hero and get hurt. Chapter 5. Sierra. There was no avoiding this moment. I brace myself to endure Asher's reaction to my tiny living quarters, and then turn around to find him focused to his left, where my entire apartment exists, his jaw set hard. I scan the room, taking in what he sees, a twin-sized bed with plain rose-colored sheets and one pillow, a classroom-sized student desk and chair, a small fan, a suitcase in the corner because it won't fit in my midget closet, no photos, art, or personal anything. He turns to face me, and just that quick he's erased the small space between us. He's close again, so very close, but he doesn't touch me, and I hate how much I want him to touch me.
Do you know how many questions I want to ask you right now?
He asks. Don't ask them, I say. He stares at me for a few incredibly long beats, his jaw tight, his expression unreadable.
Go wash up, Sierra,
he orders. I don't like orders. I took them from the Beast to protect my mother. When I left him, I swore I wouldn't take them from another man, or anyone for that matter. However, in this case, Asher's just trying to do what I've ordered him to do. Don't ask those questions he wants to ask. So I comply with this particular command willingly. I walk to the sink and turn on the water, pumping soap into my palm and working it into bubbles.
all the way to your sleeves.
He says from behind me, his breath warm on my neck, sending shivers down my spine. I glance over my shoulder, and he's practically on top of me. Do you have to hover?
Yes. I can't sit down, I can't lean on anything, and there isn't exactly a lot of space.
None that creates a need for you to stand this close.
Correct.
He says. And yet you're still standing this close.
Also correct. Where did you work before the bar?
Another bar? I say, happy to have a question I can answer honestly. I flip off the water, and surprisingly, he actually takes that as a cue to back up. I open the cabinet below the sink and pull out the box of garbage bags. When I turn around, I'm sandwiched between him and the counter, and he still smells too good for my sanity. I pull two bags from the box and then shove it at him. The sink's all yours. He takes the box but doesn't move, those piercing green eyes of his fixed on my face.
Do you know how many questions I want to ask you right now?
Didn't we just have this conversation?
Yes.
Repeating it works for you about as well as your suggestion that I take some clothes off and dance on the bar tonight. Not at all.
How long have you lived here?
I'm not going to tell you that. I'm not going to talk about me with you at all. Aware that he won't touch me until he showers, I step around him, easily escape into my closet. Pulling open the sliding wooden door, I grab a t-shirt and a pair of black Victoria's Secret pink sweats. The only pair I managed to haul across the country. I don't look at Asher, but I feel him staring at me. I feel him every second I'm in his presence, in every nerve and pore of my existence, and I don't know how that is even possible. I walk into the tiny bathroom, shut the door, and stare at the tiny shower that doesn't actually have a bathtub, and wonder how Asher is even going to move around in here. He knocks on the door, and I jump.
Undress in the shower and bag your clothes. And wash your hair.
Yes, okay, got it. There's bottled water in the fridge, and I have milk and cereal. I cringe. Milk and cereal? Am I trying to seduce him or just point out that I have nothing but milk and cereal in the house? Whatever the case, I need to get done in here and let him get cleaned up. I hurry forward and follow his instructions. First things first, I clean out my purse and stick my cash and the other few contents in the small medicine chest. I then toss my purse in the shower and step inside with it. Once I've stripped, I bag everything that might be contaminated, with the realization that I'll have to have my boots cleaned. I'm not replacing them. Once the water is flowing warm, I lean under the spray, wondering what Asher is doing out there. He said he can't sit down. Is he just standing there in the center of the kitchen? That question has me reaching for the cheap Suave shampoo in the corner and stepping up my pace. In 5 minutes, I'm drying off. In another few, I've dressed in my sweats, and I don't bother drying my hair or doing more than washing what's left of my makeup away. I'm a mess who will likely scare Asher away, and that should make me happy. Yet it doesn't, and I can't analyze why right now. I swallow a knot of about 10 million emotions, grab my phone from the edge of the sink and stick it in my pocket before opening the door and exiting the bathroom. I step into the kitchen to find Asher waiting on me, facing me, and my lips part at the sight of him gloriously naked from the waist up. My heart pounds, and somehow my gaze lands on his abs, and I decide suits are great and all, but I have a new appreciation for his low-slung jeans and the hard work Asher must put in to sport such impressively ripped abs. With good intentions of actually looking at his face, my gaze roams upward, and I'm now fixated on his broad shoulders, every muscle of which there are many, colorfully etched with ink that travels all the way down to his wrists, the artwork like an open invitation to explore his body and study it, kiss it, lick it. Not that I'll ever be licking this man. I can't be with him. I can't be with anyone. That hard, cold reality jolts me, and my eyes lift, colliding with his. Hi, I say, because I can't come up with anything more brilliant. I've been gaping at the man's body. He laughs.
Hi, I had to take my shirt off. My skin
is beautiful. I say, appalled that the words come out of my mouth. Your ink, I mean, and I don't even like ink.
But you like mine.
What am I doing? I'm not going to reply to that. I say, not sure what I'm doing with this man. The shower is all yours. He steps closer, mischief in those green eyes of his that are just as beautiful as his body and his ink.
Next time you're naked and this close to me, I'm going to have to show my appreciation. Consider yourself warned.
He steps around me. Next time? I say, whirling around to face him, to try and undo the wrong message I know I've sent him. Do you plan on making me mace you again? Because that's the only way this happens again. He pauses at the door and gives me a sideways look.
Whatever it takes to make sure there's a next time works for me.
And with that, he enters the bathroom, and I press my hands to my face. I need to make him go away, and it sucks so badly. I rotate and put the bathroom behind me, staring at the room that I've come to call home. And it is home. It's freedom. Or some version of freedom, while the massive house I'd shared with Prince Charming in Denver had been a prison. If I can make $1,000 a night like I did tonight a few times a week, I can fix this place up and save the money I need to get a fake passport. Though I have no idea where to go or how to do that, I know it's going to cost a chunk of change. The shower comes on, and I walk to the bed and sit down. Grabbing my pillow, I reach inside my pillowcase and pull out the travel book inside, reading the cover for the millionth time. A Guide to Terre d'Hôte, Guadalupe Islands, a small island in the Caribbean that requires a ferry to and from. The last place the beast will look for me. There's a knock on the front door, and I jolt, stuffing the book back inside my pillow. My heart starts to race, and adrenaline surges through me. I stand up and fold my arms in front of me. No one can get up here without me buzzing them in. Has the beast found me? My God. I pan out of breath. Has he found me again?
Sierra.
At the sound of Asher's muffled voice, I rush across the room and stop outside the door. Yes? I call out. I'm here.
Open the door.
He shouts. There's another round of knocking at the front door, and I don't hesitate. I go in the opposite direction. I open the bathroom door. Asher pokes his head around the shower curtain, all kinds of satisfaction on his handsome face.
I meant the front door, but if you'd rather join me...
Asher! I snap, my knees trembling. Stop, please. No flirting right now. I don't know who that is knocking. I haven't buzzed anyone up. I try to cover what must seem like irrational fear. This is a hellhole neighborhood, remember?
It's okay, Sierra. It's only my friend.
You aren't hearing me, I say, trying to sound calm, but my heart is about to jump out of my chest. I haven't buzzed anyone up.
Easy, sweetheart,
he says, attempting to calm me. You don't understand.
But I want to. Very much. But right now you can relax. My friend sent me a text. He followed someone into the building when they got buzzed inside.
You're sure it's him?
Yes.
His phone buzzes on the counter.
That's probably him again. I can come and...
No, no. If you're sure it's him, it's fine. But I'm not sure, so I need a weapon. I open the medicine chest. My hand comes down on the mace and I shut the cabinet door.
Oh, fuck.
Asher murmurs, evidently aware of what I'm holding and not pleased with my plan. I turn away from him right as he turns off the shower and yanks the curtain open. I don't even think about looking at him. Not now. I just need to know who's at the door. I need to know that I haven't been found. Chapter 6. Sierra. The knocking begins again. I exit the bathroom and walk to the door, but I'm not opening it yet. I push to my toes to look through the peephole, which turns out to be an impossible task since it's too high for me. I exhale and consider calling out, but if it's the beast, he'll know it's me before I spray him.
I got it, sweetheart.
At the sound of Asher's voice, I turn to find him walking toward me in nothing but a towel that looks much bigger when wrapped around me, water droplets on his naked chest, his hair wet. He moves past me to the door, and I instinctively back up, holding up the spray, ready to defend him as he flips the lock. He opens the door to reveal our visitor, a tall, dark stranger that I quickly assess. He's good-looking, in his 30s, dressed in faded jeans, the name Walker printed in white on his black T-shirt. His dark hair is thick and neatly trimmed, and he has no apparent tattoos. He's also holding a small duffel bag that has the same Walker logo printed on the side. Asher takes the bag and eyes me.